This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, welcome to the 304th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Ryan Kindall, Lala Halsema, and Juan Sebastian Barone. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today it's just the two of us, yet again, chatting your ears off about goals, about the freelancer's dilemma in 2022. I feel like our last episode was, you know, do I need to live in LA in 2022? And I feel like if we just add in 2022 to everything that comes out in January, it'll feel like we're bringing new information to people.
Well, you know, I think that in the case of the goal setting topic, I think that 2022 is a big part of it. You know, I think there is something about the nature of emerging from a pandemic and emerging from all of this and kind of like taking stock and deciding what you want out of life. You know, what you want out of your career and then how to go get it. So the goal setting topic, I want to clarify, it's not about what Oren's goals are and what Matt's goals are. It's more about how one decides what goals to set and how to hold themselves accountable to them and some techniques and practices that I've developed over the years to kind of hold myself accountable, hold oneself accountable. And so hopefully it's less about us and more about the woo-woo practice of goal setting.
Well, before we get into that, I'm going to throw an off-the-cuff topic to you, which is, have you been following the Sundance films and what's happening at Sundance right now?
Loosely, you know, I have a handful of friends who are involved over there. So like Cara Durrett has a film playing there, you know, previous guests. I have ambient awareness of what's going on at Sundance just through social media.
Yeah, it is yet another weird iteration of a film festival with this all online version, which I feel so bad for the filmmakers that they have to do that. But yeah, I've kind of been trying to keep track of like what movies are coming out and who's in them and what they're about. I really love log lines. You know, I love like reading the blacklist, seeing what topics of movies are getting people excited. This year, I've been trying to force myself to read about the movies.
Oh, interesting.
My question to you is, how important is it if you are a filmmaker, a newer filmmaker, or someone that's trying to establish themselves in the film industry, to have an awareness of Sundance and the films that are playing there? And, you know, they have an episodic program now, too. And obviously there's shorts and a lot of famous actors that become directors have movies there. And there's some really interesting stuff that comes out. There are a lot of people that are totally undiscovered get discovered. Yeah. How important is it?
I've got a two-part answer. I would say that it's worth it to be aware of the headlines. There's always going to be a few big stories. And for the most part, those are going to be the ones that are worth knowing about. Just having a working knowledge of who's doing what. Right. I think that's valuable. But I'm sure you've noticed, Oren, that like within any company, call it like any sphere, because sometimes a couple companies will all work together or whatever, they'll all have their own hierarchies of who is important and why. And I always find it irksome when you go to one of those companies and they'll refer to like certain executives by their first name or whatever. And you're all kind of expected, these people expect you to know and think that the people that they think are important are as important as they think they are. That's a little harder to predict because you don't know what niche you're going to end up in or like what niche this company works in. And, you know, so there's just kind of like this cultural thing that'll be a little hard to predict, basically. You know, knowing who the major players are at all the studios, is that advantageous? Yeah, for sure, because inevitably, you know, you don't want to put your foot in your mouth. When people say like, hey, what was your most embarrassing moment? I can think very clearly to a time when I was at the Paley Center, which is where they do like all sorts of like TV events, and Key and Peele were being honored. And I was asked to come and like take some behind the scenes photos and stuff. And so I got there early, and it's literally just like me and Keegan and Jordan and a few Comedy Central people and one or two or three other people, all of whom I knew except for this one guy. We're all kind of hanging out or whatever. And I just kind of casually say to this well-dressed man, like, oh, you know, you look really familiar, but I don't think we've met before. Hi, I'm Matt. An agent who I still hold a grudge against is like, that's Peter Principato.
I mean, I know who Peter Principato is, but I would never have any idea what he looks
right.
like.
So for context, he was the founder of the management company that everybody was rep by and like is the reason that show was a thing and why many, many, right. many other
Principato
shows.
Principato Young,
right. Now artists first, but like, you know, one of the few kings in management of comedy, like a tastemaker. And so that is a good example of, you know, that manager, of course, knows who Peter Principato is. And I should have known because literally he's the reason that we're all there in a sense. But like every company has that person, basically. And so like you can't expect to know all of the players in every single world, every single sphere. But it's worth it to kind of like, if you're going in for a general or if you're going to be working with a company really regularly, to kind of get to know the players fast, because it is a thing that is going to be advantageous for you. And is a thing that I consciously try to do if I'm going to really be involved with a group.
Yeah. I mean, to me, they're obviously overlapping circles, sure. but knowing executives and knowing like, hey, I'm going to get a meeting sure. with this person at Netflix to pitch this show is so different than like, ooh, there was this movie about a young rapper or whatever. And
right. You're talking more about like the trends of things. Yeah. Like this year at Sundance in particular, like they're going harder in genre, you know, the thing about that is that means that those movies were shot 3 years ago. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of it's a little hard to get ahead of things. I
don't think so.
Or a year
guess
and a half
that most
ago.
Movies were probably shot during COVID. Is that
yeah,
what?
Yeah, no, you're right. That's true. But they were written 3 years ago. They were written, right. And then you pitch and you get finance. I'm saying it takes 3 years to make a movie. That's all I'm saying. But I think it actually is worth noting that I think that Sundance for the long time has had big picture, big theme, social issues as a part of their mandate. And I think that they have added a little bit of genre, perhaps to kind of stand out against the Fantasias and the South Bys of the world. I think that there's a lot more weird but still socially potent movies playing this year. I think that's kind of a trend worth pointing out.
I do think I'm just self-analyzing right now, and I don't know if this is interesting to anyone else, but maybe someone else would relate to it. But I do wonder if like my recent disinterest in sitting down to watch a movie in my living room stems from A, the fact that it's in my living room and not a movie theater. And B, the fact that I've been at home all day long, like sitting at my desk working, that walking to the living room and sitting on my couch for like two and a half hours to watch a movie is not as fun as like just watching a TV show for a little bit. And,
yeah, I think there's a couple things at play. I would guess that we all tend to extrapolate our personal experience onto the marketplace. And so I think that neither of us bothered to watch Coda, but I think that it did do okay, actually, for Apple. I think really the reason the challenge of features right now is that the marketing dollars to really raise awareness behind these films isn't there because it doesn't totally make sense. Like A24 is famous for like really zeroing in on the psychographic and demographic of who specifically is going to love their film. And so if you don't fit that, then you're not getting marketed nearly as much. And so your general awareness is down. Like, I'm sure you're aware of the new Spider-Man movie and probably want to see it, but like the difference between small movies that have a much smaller marketing budget and the mega movies, there's just not a ton in between. And what used to be in between filmically, the stuff that I love the most, now it's just a TV show.
I don't know. Hopefully movies roar back into existence.
That's what I'm saying is that I think they are here. It's just that your interests don't totally align. Spider-Man made a bajillion dollars last week, right?
Yeah, but you're literally talking about the biggest outlier of like all time. It's like the most profitable movie during a pandemic. It's, you know, it's a giant, like four quadrant, like family friendly superhero movie that is coming at the right time. That's made by like a great filmmaker that is like super accessible. That's like pretty much the favorite, you know, comic book character that spans two film studios. So yes, Spider-Man did. I don't think Spider-Man is the, like is the rule. What, I think it's the exception.
No, but what I'm saying is though, is that like people are watching movies is what I'm saying.
And what I'm saying is I'm sure it's a very easy thing to Google, but my sense is that people are watching less movies now than they did 2 years ago.
Sure.
But yeah, why don't you guys email us? Let us know if you're watching as many movies as you did a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I'm sure the answer is no, but
maybe Andy Young is.
Yeah. Andy Young is for sure. We'll see what happens, basically. Like, I think that the leap from like, oh, viewership is down to like movies are dead is a pretty big jump.
Yeah. I just think if you want anyone to see your movie, it better be a movie that no one has ever seen a movie like this before, or it has to be the biggest blockbuster of all time. When someone that watches five movies a year is going to pick your movie because it's Spider-Man.
Sure. You know? Well, the hard fact is the people who only watch five movies a year aren't going to watch your independent movie. That's straight up the situation, right? But there are a lot of people who watch more than five movies a year. This is a good transition, though, into goal setting. Part of what I'm trying to talk about is why we decide from a business perspective to focus on the things we want to focus on. But before we get into that, we should talk about our Patreon, patreon.com/justshootapod. It is the place where you can support the show, throw us a couple bucks. And if you throw us 15 a month, you'll get yourself a Just Shoot It hat.
That will be mailed, hand mailed by me. Maybe I'll even lick the envelope. Just kidding. I send them in boxes.
And you might be wondering to yourself, well, dang, I heard that Matt and Oren lost their editor. She's off to do big, better things. I don't want those jerks pocketing all the cash. But in fact, we found some new help. Noah is editing this episode for us. Thanks, Noah.
Noah Bayshore.
Thanks, buddy. Doing a great job. And so if you want to continue to keep the show going, patreon.com/justshootapod.
And check out Noah Bayshore's YouTube page, NoahBayshore. Show him some love. Tell him that you found out about him from Just Shoot a Pod.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, Matt, let's talk about the topic that you have invited me to talk about.
When I first started as a filmmaker, had a job that I didn't like and was feeling a little lost, you know, some smart people and maybe some self-help gurus, you know, people talk about setting goals, right? Like the mentality that if you don't think that you can get something, you're not going to get the thing you're trying to get. The difference between dreaming of being a filmmaker and taking the actionable steps to becoming one is just about goals. It's just about clarifying what you need to do. And I remember talking to a musician friend of mine who was really, really prolific. And he was like, just figure out what the smallest next step is in your goal and just do that. And just do that over and over again. And then you'll have your thing. You know, that was pretty profound for me. It was like back when the economy had tanked, all of us were like unemployed and like just trying to figure out what to do with our lives. And I started doing an annual list of goals.
Like a vision board.
And originally, a little more concrete than that. But yeah, not dissimilar because, you know, not to get too woo-woo about it, but I do believe that you need to crystallize and specify what it is you're trying to do for yourself before you can really go out and do it.
You're going to manifest your destiny. Right.
Exactly. I think that's true. I think that's for real. And so, you know, I used to do them in like notebooks, but now I just have a Google Doc that I clone every year. Do I achieve all of the goals that I set for that year? No, of course not. But you're kind of forced to be aware of like, oh, dang, I didn't do this thing that I really want to do. Do I still want to do it? Maybe, maybe not. So the reason that I've been thinking about this so much is that, you know, there are a lot of big life goals that I met this year. Right. And that'll be the segue into the bigger, better part of this topic. But, you know, as a quick drive-by, the way that I structure mine is I try to give it a little bit of a headline. You know, I try to say like my breakout year or this or that or whatever. This one was just my big year. And I think it was meant to just be like about cornerstones. And so I have like general goals of I write and direct feature films, TV commercials, that sort of stuff. I do a log line of like what sort of creative work I want to be doing. I would like entertaining, witty, heartfelt, funny, innovative, mad and low, like is something that's written. This is, again, pretty embarrassing, but, you know, here we are. But it is a way of saying, I want to be witty. I want to be heartfelt. These are things I'm focusing on. These are things I want to bring out in my work or tell people about my work, right? For instance, when you're writing it and you're like, okay, well, I said entertaining, witty, heartfelt, raunchy, violent, subversive, regressive. You know, like you could see those words and be like, am I focused? Does this make sense? Am I all of those things? And if so, how do I explain that to people? You know, it forces you to kind of just crystallize what it is you're aiming for. But it's stuff like direct 4 broadcast campaigns, direct 6 branded spots or sketches.
Learn Blender.
Sure, stuff like that. Yeah, that stuff would totally be on there. Focus more on writing, that sort of stuff. And I kind of divided it up. There's some like watch goals as well and things like that.
And do you associate anything with like a time, like try to do this once a week or by June?
Yeah, this was a good one. Like I will update my commercial reps quarterly and then I have Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. And so those are spots basically for the work that I do in that time to be like, oh, these are the things that I'm going to reach out to people about basically. And so you can't know what campaign you shoot in Q1 that's worth bringing up to your reps. But so you leave that part blank. And so there's a little bit of a worksheet, you know, and I would cross things out as I go as well. Regular listeners of the show will know there was stuff about having a kid on there. There was stuff about buying a house. There's stuff about making this movie with my wife. That plus emerging from a pandemic has put me in a pretty thoughtful frame of mind because those were the big ones that, you know, I was alluding to that buying a house was on there for a long time and would roll over year over year over year. And like the subheading of like, save X amount of money or like get pre-qualified or, you know, those little steps you kind of have to break out a little bit more. So it can't just be the headline. It has to, the point of it is to say, okay, like these are the incremental steps that I need to meet in order to get to that goal. And so again, there's a worksheet mentality to it, but now it's got me thinking about that next round of things that I want to do. And more importantly, and this is the question for you, Oren. Why do you pick the goals you pick?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I've had my lists. I've had, you know, I was really into to-do lists for a while, and they would be categorized with kind of long-term goals, short-term goals. I've not done a great job of setting specific goals over this last year. I mean, we've had an episode where we had Roxy on and we talked about that. And I know the things I want to do. I want to, you know, make bigger commercials. I want to...
Can I?
Yeah.
I want you to hold that thought. I want to specify a little bit there, though, because I think that the language we use around things like this, I think, can be really important and powerful, and again, help you realize what it is you want. Wishy-washy words like bigger are different than broadcast, national, $1 million, or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's okay to say bigger for sure, but it's clearer if you can kind of specify a little bit more, because it could just be a quantity thing, or it could be the size of the project that's important to you, or like a feature is a good example of, like, you can make a feature for $5, you can make a feature for $500 million. And those are two pretty drastically different goals. And it's worth it to just be like, any feature is fine. A micro budget feature is fine. A studio feature is fine. But they're kind of three different pathways. Do you know what I mean? If you were explicit with yourself of saying, Geico is a perfect example, I want to direct a Geico commercial this year. There are some things that you could do that could increase the odds of you getting that commercial, rather than being a little bit more general of like bigger and better, which is what we both do. Like, you could, you know, build relationships with the people who are making those commercials. You could tailor your reel more towards that style of advertising. You know, there are things that you can do that wouldn't guarantee anything,
I can shoot some specs that are in that world. And that's kind of the most obvious thing.
It's important to make sure the reason that I'm picking this out is not because it's essential one way or the other, but I guess I'm just trying to illustrate to people at home that specificity does force you to consider how to make that specific goal happen.
Right.
And so the more specific you are, the clearer you can be with yourself. That's all.
Yeah, for sure. I think goals are super, super important, especially writing related stuff, creating, being creative on your own, learning new tools, networking. But in terms of like the... literally writing, like, I want to make a $1 million feature that has this specific actor in it or something. Sure, I can write that down and work towards it. But big goals are a little harder to see the clear path of how to get them. But maybe like smaller goals are, you know, I want to meet with like 5 commercial production companies. And here's out of this list of 15. And that's like very realistic.
I feel like I'm digging in my heels a little bit, and maybe you're helping me reestablish my convictions and processes on this. The big picture goals, even if they're hard to achieve right now because of present circumstances, they do help you kind of whittle down what those short-term goals are. The idea, like, if it was, hey, I want to do a Super Bowl commercial, then you can say, okay, well, who are the companies that make those? You'd go ahead and take a look at who's making those commercials, right? And then you'd see what friends you have in common with the people who make those commercials. So you'd get introductions to those people and, you know, meet them for coffee or whatever. They'd look at your reel. They'd probably say, oh, you know what, Oren, you really need more celebrities on your reel. And so there's a handful of very tangible short-term things that you would do just from that single goal, right? List all of the people, like, do all of that research. Make it a point to like hit up a handful of your friends to see who can make those introductions, all of that stuff. And maybe even saying yes to some smaller jobs that are a little more celebrity oriented so that you can cut a 30-second version of the GQ thing that you did or whatever. But you hear what I'm saying, right? And like, will that guarantee that you get your Super Bowl commercial? Probably not. But all of that work still does give you focus and lead to bigger and better things.
I think it's nice to, especially as a freelancer, to wake up in the morning and have a list of things that you can do right now that are going to further you in some way.
And the Google Doc thing, you asked how frequently I looked at it. And the answer was when I was feeling lost, when I was feeling untethered.
Right. You should use Maps, Google Maps.
you know, you tried to do it at least once a quarter, but like when things got slow or when things were unclear for me, it was a nice way to remind myself of what I was aiming at.
So speaking of goals and other things that freelancers have to worry about a lot. So the other thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and we'll just talk about very quickly, is given the current state of the economy and inflation and how things are getting more expensive, I've been thinking about my rate, like my day rate. You know, mm-hmm. I'm mainly direct. I'd say that's like my primary job and where I do most of my work and make most of my income from. But on the side and between gigs, I also enjoy working as a visual effects artist. And we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, directing mainly commercials, which is what I've done, or even like episodic stuff. Usually you either have a flat rate per project, right? And it doesn't really matter how much time it takes you. With something more like a visual effects artist or any crew member, you know, if you're a grip or a PA or whatever, usually it's a day rate or a weekly rate. So my day rates with a lot of, I've been doing this for a long time, and a lot of the people I get hired by are the same people that have been hiring me for many years. And I've kind of scooted my day rates up a little bit here and there, but I've realized that I think my day rate for especially visual effects work could be and should be much higher than it is. But it's hard for me to like talk to the producer that's hired me for 10 movies in a row and say, by the way, my rate is 35% higher, my day rate, than it was on the project you hired me for last week.
Partially because you imagine them being like, oh man, I got Orin's the guy. He's really, really good and he gives me a great rate. It's how you imagine the backroom conversations about who they should hire are happening, right?
Yeah. I imagine you can go to the mill, you can go to Digital Domain or whatever company exists now. You can go to ILM and you can go to these various places to do your Weta Digital to do your visual effects or a company.
Rhythm and Hues.
Yeah. Or like Barnstorm VFX or kind of those mid-sized companies that do a lot of TV shows. Or you can get the person, the like cliche person, like VFX
the
artist that works out of their garage.
Yeah.
And I believe that I am in that final category where I do it all. I get the files, I load them up, I set them up, I figure out the color space and bit rates and all those things. I do the design of all the artwork. I do the visual effects art. I deliver it. I do the notes. There's no producer. There's there's no one else. It's just me that does all. And, you know, every once in a while, I'll subcontract someone for something really specific. But 95% of the time, it's just me by myself doing this work. So I imagine that, yes, I am the inexpensive person that can turn shots around really fast. And if I charge too much, you might as well go to the mill, you know, or a place where you have more specialists and VFX artists that are really, this person does explosions, this one does wire removal, this does matte paintings.
It's worth it to slice this up into two different things though then, right? Because really what we're talking about is that you're absorbing a lot of the overhead, right? And this works for like colorists, I think, as well. There's a handful of different kind of more post-oriented people.
Right, but
like,
even if you're a makeup artist, right, you bring your table and your mirror and your lights and your makeup kit. But there is a kit fee.
That is different, though. So I think it's worth talking about them in kind of two different lights, right? Like when you go to a color house, you're paying for the receptionist and you're paying for lunch and you're paying for the couches and all of that stuff.
And the
projector, right? And so the nerd in the garage doesn't have any of that stuff. And so I think there's a pretty good argument towards charging more. Have a conversation about like, hey, listen, I'm not charging you a ton of overhead. No one wants to pay for that. But my rate is this, I think, is a good point of leverage. The makeup artist, I think, has like is a slightly different conversation, right? Because, yeah, they do have a kit fee and things like that. We're really just talking about the time rather than being compared to a larger entity, basically.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, I'm sure you've had this, you work with an art department and the production designer is just going to do the artwork for this wall that was described in the script. And you're like, shouldn't we hire like a real artist, like painter to do that? And there's that debate, and you're like, well, it's way cheaper if, you know, she just
right,
does it.
Right.
But yeah, I guess to me, the thing that compounds it is the fact that it's the same person that's been hiring me at a lower rate for a long time.
Right.
And is, well, there, do I need to acknowledge that? Do I just need to say, hey, by the way, I've raised my rates. I did raise my rates a tiny bit to not scare this producer that hires me a lot. But I wish I would have raised them more.
I think that I am the wrong person to ask, but since we're on a podcast together, what I would do is I would reach out to other peers in a similar range and tell them what you've been getting paid and ask them what they've been getting paid. I think the answer is like sharing information with people on the same level, because then, because what we're really saying is you're scared that you're going to raise your rates and the producer is going to be like, okay, well, I'll go to, you know, Schmoren's garage.
Schmoren's garage is so Schmoren, much nicer than mine.
And even though Oren's work is better than Schmoren's, Schmoren's undercutting you. You know, Schmoren doesn't have a mortgage or kids, and he's straight out of school, and he's going to take your work and he's going to be happy about it, right? That's really what we're talking. That's why you're worried about raising your rate. That's what we're talking about, right? And so I think we're just talking about internalized capitalism here, Oren. This is just like the economic anxieties of people who are forced into a gig economy, right?
Yeah, and I think this would apply to editors, to PAs, to anyone that works in a creative art, because, you know, we've learned to undervalue ourselves.
Well, I think the PAs, for better or worse, will get replaced. For worse, they will get replaced. They'll be like, companies will be like, this is what our rate is.
Right.
There's, but not, if you, there's not room for negotiation in quite the same way.
Yeah, for a company. If you're doing like an indie film and you're like, hey, we're going to pay you $75 a day, and you have this great PA for a week, and then they're like, hey, I guess a PA probably wouldn't raise their rate, but they could say, hey, I got another gig. You could see them saying like, okay, we'll pay you twice as much.
A DP certainly will do that, right?
Yeah, cinematographer, you know, for sure.
We're really talking about people who have a little bit more leverage. Right?
Yeah.
And I think the advice still stands. Talk to other people. Learn what the market will bear. And then you have a better way of assessing. Maybe you've been underpaid this whole time, or maybe, you know, I guarantee you, you could raise your rates and be still below a lot of other places. So yeah, I would just ask a few people. And then the other answer is incrementally raise your rate every year. Just make it at the beginning of every year. Like, hey, this is just kind of standard of living raise. You know, I'm getting a little bit better. It's my regular 5% bump or whatever it is.
Well, Matt, now that we've figured out life, do you mind hanging out and endorsing something with me real quick?
Unpaid endorsements.
Kaplan, you got anything?
I do.
Ooh, kick it off, buddy.
Okay, so my endorsement is a Reddit thread that I found through Dig, which I get.
It's about stonks.
It's about stonks. It's called Wall Street Bets. I find out about these things through this like daily newsletter from Dig, D-I-G-G, which I love. It's kind of like just like what's cool on the internet today. And so the title of the Dig article is, this Reddit thread of the things people do for work and how much they earn might leave you doubting your career choices. It's a really, really good thing. So someone on Reddit just posted, what is your job and how much do you get paid? I'll just read a few of them. Significant Boot 7180 says, I am a paraprofessional in an elementary school. I spend most of my time in a self-contained kindergarten to fifth grade classroom of mostly nonverbal students with autism. Occasionally I float to other classrooms. I make around $20,000 a year. I love my job, but the pay is insulting.
Yeah. My mother was a special ed teacher in a similar,
I mean, it's
situation.
Insane, right? Professional theater actress, current job, $568 a week before taxes. So, and it's in order of like people. So I'll just read like a random one from the bottom. Underwater welder, $296,000 annually.
Whoa, look out.
Yeah. Ad sales at Google. I sell ads for Google. My base salary is $185K a year.
Plus
and I made $415K last year after my quarterly bonuses.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes you just realize like, holy crap, I make so much more or so much less than some of these people that have these odd jobs. And it, I mean, you know, there's like all this been talk for years about transparency and how much people make. I guess the best way to find it is either it'll be posted on our website at justshootapod.com. You can also just look up Ask Reddit jobs salary, and I think you'll find the thread I'm talking about.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
What do you get?
So my recommendation, as we've talked about, I've realized that I love cooking. Over the pandemic in particular, it's really been a thing that has been really nice and fun for me. So I'm going to recommend a specific type of pot, but the brand in general is called Donks.
D-O-N-K-S?
D-A-N-S-K. Donsk.
Oh, Donsk. Okay.
Donsk.
You can Donsk if you want to.
Yeah. And specifically, I'm going to recommend a butter warmer, which is a small pot with just like a little handle. And like a little bit of a spout. And it is, I think, the prettiest thing in my kitchen. I have a yellow one. It's got a little lid that has kind of a built-in trivet to it. So like you can you heat things on it. It's got a walnut handle. It's like ideal for hot chocolate.
It looks
warming
exactly
butter.
Like something I would imagine in your kitchen.
I have a yellow one. And boy, just if you need to heat up a little bit of soup.
To heat up soup is... It's something that like you don't want to bring out the giant pot for, you know?
So my recommendation is to have a butter warmer, which, again, you use for other things besides butter. It's almost like the size of a large coffee mug. Like Joey from Friends would drink a latte out of a mug this size. It's very handsome. You can leave it on the stovetop. It looks great. But is great for warming and cooking things that are one or two servings, basically. And has given me a significant amount of joy. So, a Koban-style butter warmer from Donsk, specifically.
Well, thanks, Matt. Thank you all for listening. If you want to find out more about this episode and the things we talked about, go to justshootitpod.com. We also would love to hear from you, justshootitpod@gmail.com. We read all the emails personally. It's great to hear from you. And if you want to find us on social media or across all social media at Just Shoot It Pod, I'm on Instagram at OKaplan. I'm on Twitter at Smitey Pyleg.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And you're listening to music provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks,
we'll
everyone.
Catch you next time.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.